This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And good morning to you, Roger, and good morning to all of you throughout the Midwest. Orion Samuelson checking in from the desert this morning in Scottsdale, Arizona, where the temperature, would you believe, is 1 degree cooler than it is in Chicago right now. We're beginning to see the impact of fall even coming into the desert. But anyway, a lot to talk about this morning. We hope you can stay with us throughout the day here on WGN Radio. And Max Armstrong going to put a cap on National Farm Safety and Health Week. He has an emotional story to share with you from a Wisconsin dairy farmer. We'll do that a little bit later. We'll talk markets with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. And, of course, Jim Fazell is here. He wants to talk about apples this morning. And we'll do a couple of other things as well. I'll be spending the day up in ranch country in Arizona at People's Valley, where they, for over 90 years now, they're holding their annual fundraiser for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. It's called the Yavapai County Ranch Horse Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue. So a lot going on wherever you are. We hope you can stay with us, and we'll get to our visit with Jim Fazell when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. You got to the Kickapoo Valley in Wisconsin and got out, I think, just in time, Jim.
Didn't we ever. You know, we went up early because we couldn't wait to go up there and get apples and see the countryside. So we got out ahead of the storms because I know at Gaze Mills Thursday night they had 10 inches of rain, and Viroqua, where Grandma Nellie is, I think they had 8 inches of rain. You know, we got out just in time.
No it's question. At what time it's going to certainly delay harvest of some of those crops up there, but what are we talking about this weekend for the first weekend of fall?
Well, we're talking about some pretty nice weather. Temperatures are going to be moderate, and it's going to cool off for next week. But, you know, every time we start getting this crisp weather where it's a little bit nice and fresh when you get up in the morning and the days are clear, and it reminds me of apples. I think about apples a lot at this time of year because I enjoy apple pie.
Right, so we all do, I think.
Yeah, we did. So we went to the Kickapoo. Of course, that's Apple Country, Wisconsin up there. The crop is gorgeous up there, and, you know, driving through that countryside, one of the reasons we like to go up this time of year is to see what's going on. The crops in the field, they were beautiful. Some of the fields for the beans were golden, and the corn was still green a little bit. And it reminds me when we see all that, and apples on the trees are just full of apples. Reminds me of how blessed we are in this country with those crops. By the way, you know, Apple Fest at Gaze Mills is this weekend. I hope that they're able to get into the fields to get apples and so forth. And I also wonder about how Gaze Mills is, because the Kickapoo River has a way of flooding that place, and part of it.
It really does. I've experienced many floods in that valley over the years up there. So,
right, and you know, as we drove in and out, the fall color was starting too. We talked to some of our apple grower friends, some here in this part of the Midwest, and of course the ones up there in Wisconsin. Talked to Kathy at Tidy Farms, and she said there's a very good crop. Same thing with Pam at Kanofsky's. I couldn't get a hold of her because he's retired and he's out fishing or something. But I talked to Monica, that's Bill's wife, and she said that the crop is spectacular, and it's a great year for apples. She said that the yield is high, and some of the varieties are a little confused and early. That doesn't hurt any, but most are just on time. She said it's funny how Mother Nature is. Well, that's for sure. You really never know what to expect sometimes. And, you know, when we think about what our farmers go through, because they are 100% reliant on what the weather does to them, so we kind of watch what they're doing, and we count our blessings that they do what they do. It has been a tough year for the growers because the weather was cold and wet early, and so there was a lot of disease pressure. But the ones that know what they're doing have done an excellent job, and the apples that we've seen are beautiful. They're ready right now, and at your pick your own farms and at the roadside stands and at the community markets. Early in the season, there are certain varieties that do come in. You know, we look for the Jonathan apple as a guide mark as to when things are early and late. Jonathans are just coming in. So we know that the stuff that comes in early and middle September is ready. If you're getting ready to go out and get apples, you can be sure that those are ready. And those are things like the Paula Red and the Cortlands and, of course, Honeycrisp. You know, that is the premium apple nowadays. And we always go looking for Honeycrisp. Even down here, you can find them in the markets on occasion, but they're nothing like what you get when you go out to the farm itself. A little bit later, we're going to have the Red Delicious and the Romes coming in. A lot of people like Red Delicious, and it's an excellent apple. Where it gets some of its, some people talk badly about it, is because they're getting old stored apples. You know, when the apples are stored and they come right out of storage, they're as good as when they go in. But if you let them sit around for a couple of weeks, they deteriorate quickly. If you're interested in things for fresh eating, that's the one to get. The Honeycrisp is the premium. But there's some people that like a lot of other things. A lot of people like the Gold Delicious, and that's an excellent one. I mentioned storage. I'm going to talk just a little bit about storage here. I just thought of that. When I was a Whirlpool Corporation, we were involved in storage of apples. Normally, it was a system called CA storage, controlled atmospheric storage, which was developed, I believe, at Cornell University, where if you put a whole bunch of apples in a big room, maybe 100,000 bushels in a room, seal it up tight, in 21 days, the apples have respired down to where the carbon dioxide level is up and the oxygen is down, and they'll stay that way forever. Of course, they're refrigerated. We kind of figured out if you've got a 21-day-old apple and you take it out of storage, you're probably going to need to get rid of it pretty quickly. And getting rid of 100,000 bushels in a week or so takes some doing to do it. So we developed a system where we could bring a room down in 24 hours. You could open it up, close it again, and the apples were only a 1 day old. So that's where most of these apples are stored now. The important thing is that when you buy stored apples, buy them as quickly as you can out of storage before they begin to catch up with their true age. The ones for eating are not styrofoam with a skin, and if they've been handled correctly, they won't be. Varieties for fresh eating, of course, Honeycrisp. And then for pies, now we're getting into my territory. We go up looking for the Cortland apples for pies. Now, we like to mix them with a couple of other things like Golden Delicious or Paula Red. Honeycrisp is okay for pies. It makes excellent pies, but they're pricey. Now, if you want a premium apple for a pie and you don't want to eat them fresh, well, that can be done. Mix all two or three different kinds up in what you're going to put into your pie, and you'll find out that you'll see the differences in taste between the various ones. It gives a lot of interest to the pies. I'm not going to talk a lot about baking, but, you know, you can make them ahead and freeze them if you have too many apples. That's a good way to keep them. Now, where to get your apples? Of course, the pick-your-own farms. I remember when we were little and our kids were little, we were going out to pick apples on a gorgeous farm, on a gorgeous fall day at the apple farm, and we lived in Michigan then. But you can plan your day out. There are a lot of places here in Illinois where you can get apples all season in Woodstock or Honey Hill and Waterman, Kuiper's and Maple Park and so forth. And your Farm Bureau and your county will have a list of the pick-your-own farms. Out of state, I mentioned Herb Teichman. That place is called Tremendous Fruit Farm, and it is. Sunrise Orchards and Westridge up in Wisconsin is where we head. So a lot of places. But also, you can go to the community farm markets. Not quite the same experience, but you can still talk to the growers. They bring the apples in from various parts here in the Midwest, and they're fresh off the tree. They're only a day or so old, too, just like what you would get out at the farm. Prices are a little high this year. Expect $1 a pound or more for some. And if you buy a half bushel or a bushel at a time, it's probably going to be less. But anyway, the important thing is get out and enjoy the spectacular weather, then make an apple pie. Call me when it's ready.
Call me, too, because I appreciate, although I have to say, that's one of the few things that I have said over the years, nobody made as well as my mother. My mother's apple pies were absolutely superb. So
I'll bet they were. She was in the right place to have the best apples, too.
Yes, indeed. Well, as always, thank you for the ideas. And again, farmers markets are still open, so get out there and get the fresh produce. And well, my golly, it'll be October before we talk to you again, won't it?
It sure will. We'll look forward to it.
Okay, Jim Fazell, he knows everything about horticulture, and he joins us every week here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 24 minutes after 6 o'clock here, after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. We're coming to the end of an annual event. That's the National Farm Safety and Health Week. Farming is a dangerous occupation. We talk about safety a great deal. And this morning, Max Armstrong wants to share a specific story about safety on the farm. Max?
Well, as we both know, Orion, a farm tragedy is no respecter of age. There are many older farmers who are hurt or die in farm accidents. There are some farm children who die as well. The young man who died in a very unusual manure pit accident in Wisconsin back on the 15th of August was 29 years old. Michael Biotish was out doing what he had done on his farm on many different occasions, but the weather that morning was very different. It was an unusual set of circumstances that took his life because of hydrogen sulfide poisoning, the coroner eventually ruled. Yesterday, during an emotional visit over the telephone with Michael Biotish's dad, Bob, I heard the story firsthand about how he lost his son last month.
Mike and I talked on Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening. The next day, we're having manure haulers coming in at 6:30 in the morning. So typically, we never haul out our manure this early in the season. It was August 15th. The haulers were coming because, well, we've had a lot of rainfall. The pit was rising, and we had some fields we took wheat off, and we're going to put fall seeding of alfalfa. So Mike got up at 3 o'clock in the morning, had his tractor hooked up to the agitation system here from hauling manure out. And he was sitting there, and he took his pickup truck here from the front yard, drove probably 1,000 yards and parked it there and basically started the tractor up and was sitting in his pickup truck. And after a while, he got up, and, well, he sent some text messages to his friends and basically said that he was stirring up the pot of gold because we raise steers, and there's a lot of high-valued manure nutrients in this manure, I guess we should say here. So he said he was stirring up the pot of gold because of the dollar value and all that stuff. Well, that was at 4 o'clock in the morning, and basically I got up at 4 o'clock, got out of bed, and I walked to the bathroom, and I looked out the window and seen the tractor was running, and Mike was sitting in his pickup. No big deal. Well, I went back to bed, and shortly after that I got up at 6 o'clock, and the hired man came here and grabbed the semi and went to the shop, put a little oil in the motor, was a little bit low, and drove up by Mike. And all of a sudden, he didn't see Mike in the tractor. He said, well, he probably figured he was sleeping in his pickup truck. He went up to the pickup. He did not see him. And he walked up in a manure pit, and there he was laying on his back. And basically what he did, he got up his pickup truck and probably just looked how the manure was agitating because it's been sitting since spring, and we kept them, you know, putting more manure in there. And he walked 20 feet from his pickup truck, walked down in elevation from the ground level to where he collapsed was maybe 2.5 feet in elevation. And when he was doing this agitation, there was a heavy, well, there was no air movement, and there was heavy fog. And basically the cloud, or the fog was so heavy that the air wasn't moving and everything was staying suppressed. Mike got out of his pickup truck, and basically when he broke the seal of the crust of the manure, we thought it was either methane or sulfur dioxide, and his hydrogen sulfide was the villain that we found out later after we had the toxicology reports come back. He got overcome in a matter of a couple seconds with his hydrogen sulfide, and he collapsed, and he was deceased just like that. And we found him at exactly 6:30 that Monday morning.
He was outside at the time, right? I mean, he was outside, outdoors. He was not in a building. He was not down in the pit.
What is so unusual about this circumstances is basically the pit we got, it's about a 3.5 million gallon pit. It's just an average about the size of a football field. The only thing that's there that's anything is it's a wide open pit. We got a 50 by 140 foot shed that's open all the way around with curtains to be down in the wintertime. Everything is wide open. Everybody and their brother cannot understand how this could ever happen because of it's a wide open pit. But as I've been getting educated from talking to people back and forth, is, see, everything this year we've had more rain, more warmer temperatures. It's just like a pot you have on a stove. The more you keep heating it, the more activity there is, and basically the anaerobic or aerobic bacteria in that soil or in the pit were working more because of the warmer summer we had. And basically the perfect worst storm came where Mike was there and he got overcome with those gases and he didn't even know what hit him.
And Orion, as Bob Biotish explained to me, it is something that could have happened to anyone. It could have happened to Bob himself. It could have happened to a hired man. It could have happened to a group of rescuers, perhaps, coming in to try to aid Michael Biotish. And in fact, there were 13 head of cattle that were immediately overcome and had died because of that hydrogen sulfide gas. Three others were ailing and had to be euthanized. And Bob Biotish found from this experience that is a peril that insurance companies do not cover. A fund has been set up in the name of Michael Biotish at the Community First Bank at Stevens Point, Wisconsin. They're trying to raise some money not only for education, but for also air monitors that might be used on farms. They've already raised about $17,000 in the few weeks since Michael Biotish lost his life. And as his dad, Bob, put it in the conversation with me yesterday, Orion, if I can eliminate just one other death from asphyxiation, whatever we are doing here is worth the effort.
Max, what a tragic story. And it was very thoughtful of the father to share it with all of us, something we should think about, even though today is the final day of the annual observance of National Farm Safety and Health Week. Let's make that the other 51 weeks of the year as well. Saturday morning show here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. And welcome back to part two of the Saturday morning show. We'll talk markets and we'll talk Capitol Hill agriculture this morning as well. It's here on the Saturday morning show, where right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson. This week, taking a look at some more agricultural challenges from California. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products. That means products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, even ColorFast fabrics and carpets. And the little brown bottle has been around since 1947, and it's still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check them out at wink.com. That's W-H-I-N-K.com. I have said it many times over the years, if it happens agriculturally in California, look for it to spread across the country. And California has made news the past couple of weeks. First of all, when the governor signed a bill requiring farm workers to be paid overtime. California, now the only state in the nation with a law that says that will happen. And more recently, Governor Jerry Brown signed another law that means California will begin regulating greenhouse gas emissions tied to dairy cows and landfills. The law targets a category of gases known as short-lived climate pollutants, which have an outsized effect on global warming, despite their relatively short life in the atmosphere. But what does it mean to California dairy farmers? Well, according to Tom Scott, California director for the National Federation of Independent Business, a small business advocacy group, quote, the law represents a direct assault on California's dairy industry and will hurt manufacturing by creating an arbitrary limit on natural gases which dissipate quickly. Dairy farmers will be required to reduce methane emissions from manure to 40% below their 2013 level by 2030. They will get some help, $50 million from the state's fee charged to polluters known as cap and trade. That money will maybe help a handful of dairy farmers buy the methane digesters, which use methane from manure to generate energy sold to electrical utilities. The law also allows the Air Resources Board to regulate cow flatulence. Coming out of either end, I guess, if there's viable technology to reduce it. So anyway, one of the questions I have, and this probably makes no sense at all, centuries ago, there were millions of bison, buffalo, roaming the plains of the United States. What did they do about methane then? But I guess that's another story. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. We're going to talk markets in just a couple of minutes, so stand by. Brian Basting will join us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Joining us in the studio this week is Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. That's based in Bloomington, Illinois. And that's McLean County, Illinois, Brian, which for years was the leader in corn production and soybean production. Now soybean production county is Cass County, North Dakota,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, as you take a look at that part of Illinois, what's happening?
Very active corn harvest, Orion. One of the most active corn harvests we've seen in recent years. The corn has matured quickly because of the very warm nights we've seen this summer. It's drying down quickly, and farmers are really going after the corn right now very aggressively.
What kind of moisture are we looking at?
I think it's anything high teens, low 20s, very, very harvestable, for lack of a better word, but not an issue there at all.
One of the areas in Illinois we always look at is Racehorse Flats in Decatur, Illinois. Are they doing pretty good yields there from what you've heard?
You bet. They've really got off to a good start here. Here's some very good corn yields down there. Corn yields in some cases rival or even surpass 2014. Now, it's a little early yet. I don't want to read too much into that, but it certainly is off to a great start.
And I keep hearing from farmers who say, it's not a record crop till it's in the bin. And we're looking at some rather wet forecasts, and we've certainly seen it this past week over the northern part of the belt. Any major concern on the part of farmers or the companies that take in the grain?
At this time of year, weather is everything, as you and your listeners know. So when you look at those issues that have confronted southeast Minnesota, a lot of Wisconsin, northeast Iowa, some really challenging issues there with harvest. So anytime that crop is ready, guys are ready to go and go get that corn and beans when it's ready, because anytime you get into some wet weather, all bets are off. So I think right now there's not a real concern. They're going to go after the corn when it's ready. But I know your listeners up in northern Illinois had some rain here this week. They may be slowed for a bit.
And Reuters used, I thought, interesting language this week when they talked about a new disease lurking in the cornfields of Illinois and other Midwest states called diplodia. Are you hearing anything, and what is it?
We've heard that. It's a fungal disease on the ear of the corn, and it's may causing some loss of test weight in some cases. It's not a devastating disease, except that it's annoying. If it gets too high of levels, you're going to get some dockage there and that type of thing. So, yes, we are hearing more incidents than usual. These warm temperatures we've had this summer, the rainfall that we had in August, not a good combination for that. So we are seeing more fungal disease for the corn.
The Reuters story quoted one analyst saying it could mean as much as a $2 docking when they sell it. That wouldn't leave much.
No, that would probably be the extreme case in the context of the percentage of it there. But enough where it would hurt, obviously. Anytime you got corn prices at $3 or right around that area, I think anytime you're knocking off, it doesn't help. So we have not heard extreme levels, but there are pockets, I'm sure, that are out there that are higher than producers would like.
Again, turning to the soybean crop, will they finish corn harvest before they go to beans, or vice versa?
You know, that's I was thinking the same thing driving up this morning. That's certainly a possibility, yeah, in some cases, because the beans are not ready. They'll all come ready at once here about that 1st of October as usual. But when that corn is ready, it's dried down and it's ready to be harvested, guys are going to get after the corn. And I think it could be, in some cases, guys could be done with corn before beans.
As I watch the USDA sales reports, I continue to see China day after day in the market. Is that, to me, that's a little bit of a surprise after what we were talking about last winter when we said, hey, China will slow down. Doesn't appear to have happened.
Yeah, and I think they've used this pullback in the market. The market pulled back here, and now it's actually bouncing up a little bit in the beans. But it gives an indication of how strong that demand is. Not only from China, we're also seeing some good bean sales to other destinations too. So what we're seeing is that protein demand is not only as strong in China, other areas around Asia are really responding, and it means we need to get this big bean crop in the bin. We need to get a big bean crop in South America. But yeah, as far as China is, it may not be quite as robust as what it was last year, but it's still very strong demand.
Looking at South America, will the market activity now have an impact on, because they're into planting season, I think they can now plant soybeans, can't they?
Yes, they have started.
You think it'll have any impact on what Brazilian and Argentine farmers do?
It may. I think in some cases, for example, we're probably going to see more corn acres in Argentina this year with the government backing off the export taxes, the new president coming in. At the expense of beans, they're still going to plant a lot of beans there. I don't want to give your listeners the indication they're just going to, go wholesale into corn. But we may not see the expansion also in Brazil we've got accustomed to the last several years. The aggressive expansion of beans may curtail a bit in Brazil this year.
So as producers take a look at this corn and the soybean crop coming through that auger into the grain wagon, what, if anything, should they be doing in the market right now? Do they sell it out of the field, or what do they do?
One of the things we talked about this week, Orion, is that gross revenue is something we'd encourage your listeners to think about. By that, I mean particularly some of these early bean yields in the areas that are harvesting beans are exceptional.
Yeah.
Exceptional. And when you multiply the bean price, let's say 925 cash beans times 65 or 70 bushel beans, the equivalent is a very high gross revenue relative to their APH. In other words, it would be the equivalent of selling maybe 1150, 1175 beans at your APH. So you just do the math, and what it comes down to is gross revenue. So I'd encourage your listeners to think about that in terms of marketing and what they can do to maybe take advantage of these excessively high or extremely high yields. And I'd encourage the same thing on corn. Think about gross revenue.
Are we going to see 100 bushel soybeans regularly this year?
I wouldn't be shocked. I guess I'm thinking that might be on the high end,
right?
But exceptional bean yields early on here. And again, we don't want to read too much into it. We're less than 10% into the harvest, but a great point. We could see some historically high bean yields.
And while wet weather would be a challenge for farmers, it might help elevators on storage, I would guess, slowing down the delivery.
This could be a really challenging year storage-wise if the weather stays clear. So you make a good point. I think there may be breaks here that will be needed. Otherwise, some of these places could get overwhelmed if they lock in this 200 bushel, 220, 240 bushel corn and then start to see the beans come in on top of that. So, yeah, there'll be some instances of storage space will be a crunch this fall. And so maybe some weather breaks would help.
Any idea on how much whole crop is still sitting in those bins?
I think that there was a larger than normal percentage of old crop corn carried over from last year. I don't think there was many old crop beans carried over. I do think there was some old crop corn carried over. We'll get that in the September 30th grain stocks report from the USDA.
So final question, as you talk to farmers, what seems to be the mood? They love the yields, but price is a concern?
I couldn't have summarized it any better, Orion. The yield is exceptional here. Our producers are very pleased with that overall. Like you said earlier, it's not in the bin until it's in the bin. But there is some concern about price. There is some concern about working capital on the farm. There is some concern about going forward into 17, what things look like. So I just encourage your listeners, first of all, first things first, get the crop harvested, focus on that gross revenue, and then move forward from there. But there are marketing tools available that you can use to lock in a floor and leave the upside open.
As always, thank you. A visit with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading, headquartered in Bloomington, Illinois. And we're at 5 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on WGN Radio. With all of the attention focused on the presidential election, we need to take a look at something else that's happening. Just a few more weeks of this congressional session. And what happened agriculturally during the past couple of years of this Congress? Well, whenever we want to learn about farming on Capitol Hill, we turn to our man in Washington, Patrick Haggerty.
We're visiting today with Mike Conaway. Mr. Conaway is the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, and thanks for being with us today. We're going to have a new president come January 20th. We don't know who it's going to be. We might have a Senate controlled by the Democrats. We don't know that. So what are America's farmers and ranchers, what challenges are they going to have next year, and what can the new president and the new Congress do to help them?
Well, the challenges will be the ones that, and by the way, thank you for having me on your program. The challenges will be one they faced for the last 3 years, a 42% drop in net farm income in the last 3 years, commodity prices staggeringly low. Article in today's USA Today talks about the eighth month in a row where grocery prices at the grocery stores have fallen, which obviously filters down to the production side of it. So that they'll be coping with that in the next couple of years. Our role, and again, you didn't mention who the next Secretary of Ag will be as well.
Right.
But a lot of new players on that side of the on that part of it. The 2018 Farm Bill will have to get done, in my view. We ought to get it done on time. There's no reason to not get it done on time. It'll include the work that will get done on SNAP and as well as the safety net. With respect to the safety net, which farmers are more particularly interested in conservation, the 14 Farm Bill had a lot of new things in it, a lot of new programs. I think the 18 Farm Bill will be more about fine-tuning, trying to find out what works, what doesn't work. We've had some issues with county ARC payments, and we've had dramatic issues with cotton. That program didn't work at all. And so rather than a rewrite of a lot of stuff as we did in 14, I think the work in 18 will be that. But here's why it's important. The current process we have, the current safety net we have in place now, works. And by that, I mean it delivers to the American consumer, the folks who eat groceries, the most abundant, safest, and affordable food and fiber supply of any developed nation in the world. That's what it's currently delivering. You can love it, you can hate it, but it is delivering, and that's demonstrable. Whatever we do to change the system in 18, the metric that I'm going to try to squeeze that through is, what does it do to the price of food? What does it do to that mom who's, listen, the bottom 20% of the economic food chain is paying 30-35% of their disposable income for food? What happens to that mother if we arbitrarily raise the cost of food because we've done something that the high-end consumers want but couldn't care less about the cost of making that happen? Those moms in their circumstances, they use their food budget as the flex. I mean, the house payment doesn't change, rent payment doesn't change, car payment doesn't change. If something happens during the month that they've got to have money somewhere else, then it comes out of the food budget. So whatever we do with the safety net, whatever we do with the Farm Bill in 18, it's got to be, it does not have a deleterious effect on the cost of food, particularly for the folks at the bottom of the food chain.
Well, thank you for your time. Thanks for being with us today, Mr. Chairman. In Washington, Patrick Haggerty.
Patrick Haggerty, the man we depend on to cover agricultural activity in Washington, because they do a lot of farming, plowing, and cultivating on Capitol Hill in the halls of Congress. Well, what's going on today? McHenry County, Illinois, Farm Bureau and a group of other agricultural gatherings staging the annual McHenry County Farm Stroll. It comes up tomorrow. It's free, but they suggest you bring some money along because the farms on the tour will be selling products, and you can join the tour anywhere. So just go online to McHenry County Farm Bureau and get the lineup of farms. They're really visiting some interesting farms in McHenry County tomorrow for the annual McHenry County Farm Stroll. Meanwhile, here in Arizona, where we're working this weekend, we'll spend the day in Peoples Valley, about 90 miles northwest of Scottsdale and Phoenix, at the annual Yavapai County Ranch Horse Sale, Club Calf Sale, and Beef Barbecue. We'll be joining about 2,000 people at that event later today. Talking about the fact that China is finally doing away with the ban on U.S. meat imports that has been in place since the mad cow disease 13 years ago. So, should be a good day on the ranch in Arizona, and I hope it's a good day wherever you are. And thank you, as always, for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show, and thanks to our engineer, and Bob Ferguson, who helps put it all together. And that brings us to the 6 o'clock hour. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.